Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, boys and girls. I just got this tonight from AIM, A-I-M. It's an article by Cliff Kincaid. May the 17th, 2010. Cronkite named as Soviet target by the FBI. While many questions remain about the nature of this secret influence operation and its ultimate success, the documents provide absolute confirmation that the Soviets were targeting major figures in the U.S. media, while American boys were dying in Vietnam, while 1,400 pilots left the military to go back to commercial aviation because they weren't allowed to bomb airfields because there were Russian advisors there training Vietnamese on how to kill Americans. You think about that. You think it's any different today? It's worse today. The late CBS Evening News anchorman Walter Cronkite is named in a just-released FBI document from 1986 as being targeted in a Soviet active measures campaign against President Reagan's anti-communist foreign policy. And boy, we could sure use that today. And Cronkite is named as a possible member of a U.S. delegation that would sign a pro-Soviet People's Peace Treaty. Cronkite, once known as the most trusted man in television news because of his influence during the time when three network news programs dominated the national dissemination of news and information, bears a great deal of responsibility for the American military defeat in Vietnam. Let me repeat that. Bears a great deal of responsibility. Cronkite bears a great deal of responsibility for the American military defeat in Vietnam and the communist conquest of that Southeast Asian country. Democrats do not do good when it comes to war. They get you into it, and then they leave you to die on the battlefield, and they promise they will never run again. You think about it. You ask the Cubans what Kennedy did to them at the Bay of Kennedys. It was Kennedy that brought us to Vietnam. It was Kennedy that killed Diem. It is Obama who tried to have Mohammad Karzai killed. Did he issue orders to have him killed? No. But what he did do is he waged a campaign to discredit him, and therefore weakening his position and strengthening his enemies. And as in my opinion, Obama tried to pull a DM on Karzai. Cronkite, once known as the most trusted man. The term active measures in the FBI document carries special significance since it designates the Soviet intelligence operations to damage the United States and further the interest of the Soviet foreign policy, which exists today as they recoup the states that they lost, as they force them back into the Soviet influence. The most common were political, and they're doing it with the help of Obama. He already gave them back Czechoslovakia and Poland, and he's giving Israel to the Palestinians. Not that you should notice. The most common were political influence operations in which high-profile U.S. and Western political and public figures were used to promote Soviet objectives. And when he gives Israel to the Palestinians, every Jew in the world is in trouble, including in the United States. Released to this journalist through the Freedom of Information Act, the Cronkite documents include an FBI cover letter dated June 25, 1986, which designates an attached internal memorandum from the Campaign for a People's Peace Treaty as part of a Soviet active measures campaign. The document is addressed to the FBI director and the attention of the Bureau's Intelligence Division. And one thing that always worried me was Nixon and Deep Throat, how the second in command in the FBI could leak all that information to the Washington Post. How compromised are all our intelligence agencies? You know what? I miss Joe McCarthy. I miss his good intentions. Well, many questions remain about the nature of the secret influence operation and its ultimate success. The documents provide absolute confirmation that the Soviets were targeting major figures in the U.S. media, and they still do today. Other targets were talk show host Phil Donahue, Harrison Salisbury of the New York Times, David Brinkley of ABC News, and Bill Moyers of CBS News, and later with a public television. The campaign for a People's Peace Treaty was a project of the Soviet Front National Council of American-Soviet Friendship and was designed to create public and international pressure to undermine Reagan's U.S. conventional and nuclear arms buildup. You know, I seem to recall that I think it was Ted Kennedy. Didn't he go to Russia to get help to campaign against Ronald Reagan? Am I wrong about that? Google that one. And who was Jimmy Carter with him? Or was it Jimmy Carter that went? Jimmy Carter that went to get help to campaign against Reagan. He turned to his allies. Assistant Director for Intelligence of the FBI, Edward J. O'Malley, testified before Congress in 1982 that the National Council of American-Soviet Friendship was founded in 1943 by the Communist Party USA and served Soviet interests. Cronkite, who retired as CBS Evening News anchorman in 1981 but continued to speak publicly about current events, was a natural target of the Soviets. Now hang in there. Hang in there. So I was saying Cronkite was a natural target of the Soviets and their agents because he was already considered sympathetic to their cause. In 1979, he had given an interview to the Soviet magazine Literary Gazette and told Vitaly Kobish that the Soviet threat was most likely a myth, according to the magazine. Cronkite went on to say that I will never believe in a Soviet threat. Shortly after the interview was published, the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. Donahue, I used to call him Dunkyue, who pioneered the daytime television talk show format in the U.S. before Oprah Winfrey capitalized on it, had already been doing programs with Soviet journalist Vladimir Posner, and continues to be a prominent left-wing activist, making occasional media appearances. His program on MSNBC was canceled in 2003. His former senior producer, Jeff Cohen, claims he was too anti-war. The FBI cover letter and memorandum can be seen on pages 58 and 59 in his collection of materials released under the FOIA Act. The FBI had previously informed Cliff Kincaid that Cronkite's personal FBI file had been inexplicably destroyed by the Bureau. Other claims made in the documents that Cronkite assisted anti-Vietnam War protesters and said that CBS would rent a helicopter to transport Senator Edmund Muskie to an anti-war rally had been seized upon by other news outlets, which apparently got batches of the same material through separate FOIA requests. Pages 6 to 9 in the collection indicate that Cronkite was privately offering to provide a CBS News open mic to the organizers of the 1969 moratorium to end the war in Vietnam. A 1969 staff study of the House Internal Security Subcommittee identified the organizers of the Vietnam Moratorium Committee as strongly influenced by the Communist Party in USA. The offer of support from Cronkite to the anti-war organizers is consistent with the fact that the CBS newsman had already declared that the Communist 1968 Tet Offensive was a defeat for the U.S. and that the American government should negotiate a military withdrawal. Cronkite's verdict that the war was unwinnable and its acceptance by other media and many members of the public forced the transformation of U.S. policy into one of negotiations with the Communists and eventual withdrawal of U.S. forces, leading to the Communist takeover of South Vietnam in 1975. Communist North Vietnam had launched an invasion of South Vietnam in 1960, creating the National Liberation Front of South Vietnam, or Viet Cong, as surrogates to wage war. In the March-April 22 issue of Military Review, in an article titled Lessons Learned from Vietnam, Dr. William L. Stearman revisits the controversial period of 68 and 69, which was critical for the defense for the Vietnamese communists because, despite Cronkite's claims, they had actually been militarily defeated by U.S. and South Vietnamese troops during their Tet Offensive. Stearman notes that Cronkite's hasty and faulty verdict on the war came after a quick trip to Vietnam in late 68. The Tet Offensive was a major North Vietnamese blunder, notes Uwe Seaman Neto, an international journalist who covered the war. At Tet, he writes, Hanoi lost 45,000 men and its entire infrastructure in the South. Yet major United States media outlets, the media, portrayed Tet as a defeat for their own side. He said, referring to Cronkite and others, following Tet, President Johnson announced he would not stand for re-election. That's why I say that the Democrats get you into war and then they leave you to die and promise never to run again. Though a military victory for the United States and his allies, Tet ultimately marked the beginning of their defeat. Stearman concluded, thanks to U.S. media, the enemy won the war where it is most counted. And media can be anything from Sesame Street to MSNBC's Nightly Report. Stearman concluded, thanks to U.S. media, we were not as successful as the Vietnam communists. Began the operations. The Congress held hearings and published reports on such topics as Soviet active measures, Soviet covert action, emphasized as Soviet intelligence operatives as their agents were operating. You think about that. You think about that cesspool called Washington, D.C., where all these clowns in the House and the Senate go partying, all right, and are hooking up and having second families. And you don't think the KGB agents sitting on bar stools in every bar in Washington, D.C., hookers that work for the KGB, you have no idea. You lost your country and you're never getting it back. We know now, because of documents discovered and released after the Soviet collapse, that Senator Ted Kennedy, I told you that before, didn't I? Senator Ted Kennedy made an offer to the Soviets to help organize opposition to Reagan's pro-defense policies. Burn in hell, Kennedy. I hope you're in boiler number three alongside of Congressman Murtha, who sold out the Marine Corps, who died being the most hated Marine in history. He passed Lee Harvey Oswald. Burn in hell. Kennedy was a leading congressional sponsor of the Nuclear Freeze Campaign. to prevent deployment. He's also the guy that opened all the gates to all the cities. And he let all the swill of the world come in here. Kennedy was the leading congressional sponsor of the Nuclear Freeze campaign to prevent deployment of U.S. nuclear weapons in Europe to counter the Soviet threat. Think about this. When Ronald Reagan was president, the greatest threat to the Soviets was Star Wars. They could not believe. They seen our stealth bombers. They couldn't believe that we had stealth in space. And now what do we have? We have a shuttle that can't get off the ground and needs to get a ride with the Russians. I just sent out a little cartoon, and it shows the moon, and it shows the shuttle taking off of the moon, and the caption underneath says, "All Americans, please go to the back of the shuttle, and you all have to get off at the first stop, and have your tickets ready." So, hang in there. I mean, astronauts. That's our astronaut. That's our new space program. So, where am I here? The Soviet communists, who were waging the same kind of propaganda war against U.S. policymakers and the public, were not as successful as the Vietnam communists. The Congress held hearings and published reports on such topics as Soviet active measures. And we know now, this is what I was talking about, because of the documents that Ted Kennedy was working for the communists. I think he was. At Columbia University in 1983, a young Barack Obama wrote sympathetically about groups involved in a nuclear freeze campaign and the dangers of militarism, but expressed a hope for total disarmament. Total disarmament means total stupidity. As president, he is pursuing the goal of a world free of nuclear weapons. Yeah, and we all want chocolate pudding, which many experts say is unverifiable, and just signed a new strategic arms reduction treaty with Mother Russia that he wants ratified by the U.S. Senate. My friends, what we have to do with this president is we have to fight a delaying action. We cannot allow him any victories, no matter how small. Everything, stall for time. You got to buy yourself time till November, because if you don't, this guy is going to crush us all. You've got to neutralize him in November. And right now, what's the word I'm looking for? Filibuster. Filibuster everything. Stall for time. Play for the holidays. Do not let this guy continue the damage that he's doing to this presidency, to this country. You've got to filibuster everything he's doing. You got to fight a delaying action. The United States is in the same position as Russia was when the Germans went into the Soviet Union. They have to burn everything before the Napoleon or before Hitler got his way. I'm back. Okay. And that's what we got to do. We got to fight a delaying action, because we are on a retreat, and we have to stall for time, and we got to pray that the American people come to their senses and it's a pawn of the Soviet Union. So where was I? Okay, let me just catch my breath here and here we go. Cronkite and other media personalities were included in a list of possible members of the U.S. delegation to sign the treaty. A left-wing organization, the Center for Defense Information, is named as being in the position of providing a military person to sign an instrument. My friends, you've lost your country. You're not getting it back. I'm telling you, you have no idea how much trouble you're in. You have no idea. You have absolutely no idea. You're in the final phases of the death of the United States. In the area of industry, a first name Armin is listed, and a agent. Armin Hammer was a Soviet agent. Okay? And Occidental Petroleum was the beneficiary of a lucrative oil deal that was concocted when President Clinton and Al Gore were in power. And how it worked was, it was the Naval Oil Reserves that were in Elk Hills, California. And they were created by Teddy Roosevelt so that the United States Navy would always have fuel for its fleet. And Gore and Clinton convinced other fools who stood to gain financially. And that's what it's all about, my friends. Your country is for sale. You can buy any senator. You can buy any congressman. Just as well as you can buy a dime a dance. And they're all for sale. And they're for sale to foreign countries. That's the worst part. We can't even keep the payoffs at home. How sad. And so what happened was the Elk Hills Naval Oil Reserves was sold to Occidental Petroleum in a very quiet bid. Okay? And they got a ton of oil for 50 cents on the dollar. Unbelievable. And the excuse was the Navy didn't need the oil anymore. And you know what? I heard a congressman say the other day, we really don't need a Navy. The labor designation includes a reference to the ACTWU, the Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union. The memorandum says that Alan Thompson will take the signed peace treaty to Moscow and present it to the Soviet Peace Committee. Thompson was the executive director of the National Council of American-Soviet Friendship. How about a friendship between the American people and the Russian people? How about a friendship between the people that have the American people and the people that have been screwed by the Russians, screwed by the Soviets? Despite his reputation as an honest and objective newsman, we noted in a column published shortly after his death that Cronkite was a key player in an on-the-air news assault on the Reagan administration's defense buildup. We have to go back to that defense buildup, my friends. We got to get stronger. And if we're not building neutron bombs, we got to start building neutron bombs. We got to go on the offensive. George Washington said, in times of peace, prepare for war. I'll say it again. George Washington said, in times of peace, prepare for war. We wrote after Ronald Reagan took office as president and proceeded to build up a U.S. national defense capability in the wake of disastrous Jimmy Carter years. Here's a guy who couldn't even defend American soil. He handed Iran to the Ayatollahs. He handed the American embassy, American soil, to the Ayatollahs. He made one half-hearted attempt to rescue the prisoners. He didn't have to do anything. He didn't even have to go to Iran. All he had to do was seize the Iranian embassy in New York like they had just done to us and say it's time for a prisoner swap. And he could have done it in other locations. He could have done it on a 10-to-1 basis. He could have seized ships. He could have done anything he wanted. But you know what he chose to do? He chose to sell out the nation. He is the first traitor president. And don't think we don't have a lot of traitors. It's more than 12%. The memorandum says he signed that. Okay, despite his reputation as an honest newsman, he was a key player in the CBS news assault on the Reagan administration. We wrote after Ronald Reagan took office as president and decided to build up after the disastrous Jimmy Carter years, CBS News acted to counter the Reagan effort. They aired a five-part program, The Defense of the United States, in which Cronkite appeared to tell us, you know who else smoked a pipe? Joseph Stalin. The relationship with the Soviet Union was dominated by the same old fears and doubts because we didn't have a genuine dialogue with the Soviet communists. You heard the earlier part of the show? They have concentration camps yet for children in the Soviet Union. You think you know everything that's going on there? AIM founder Reed Irvine noted at the time of the broadcast that CBS gave us the Kremlin view that it is the United States, not the Soviet Union, that is striving for an impossible military superiority. I believe in military superiority. If we are not strong, we will be destroyed. We have to be stronger than our enemies, and our enemies have to know it. The only reason your throat's not being cut tonight is because there's a 19-year-old kid somewhere out there in the world with a rifle that's keeping the cutthroat from getting to your house. And don't think they can't come. They've been here before. We're going to have a mosque where the World Trade Center used to be. You don't think we're losing this war on terror? Well, Reagan pursued his arms buildup, including development of the Strategic Defense Initiative, and the Soviet Union eventually collapsed in 1991. The effort to save Vietnam from communism was not successful, thanks in large part to Cronkite's influence. Do you know the country that has the highest abortion rate per capita in the world? Do you know what it is? It's Vietnam. How sad. The bloody result. Check me out on it. The bloody result, 58,260 U.S. servicemen and nearly 1 million civilians died in the Vietnam War. The South Vietnamese military lost about 250,000 dead, and over 1 million communist soldiers were killed. Tens of thousands of South Vietnamese allies of the U.S. left behind after the American military withdrawal were tortured in communist camps. I call Sean Penn Sean Phnom Penh because it's guys like him that created the 2 million deaths in Cambodia. Thousands of us fled in leaky boats, becoming known as the boat people. The government of Vietnam today remains a communist dictatorship. Meanwhile, the National Council on American-Soviet Friendship turned its collection of pro-Soviet films over to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. The films provide a fascinating window into a country and a political system which no longer exists, and gives viewers a way to see the Cold War from another perspective, the Academy says. While the Soviet political system may not exist, the Russians have continued many of the old Soviet-style intelligence and influence operations. The book Comrade J, based on the revelations of a Soviet master spy, Sergei Tretikov, identified former Clinton State Department official and now Brookings Institution head Strobe Talbot as a dupe of Soviet intelligence. Talbot has been a columnist for Time magazine, where he wrote about the need for world government, a cause also embraced by Walter Cronkite. There's no difference between Walter Cronkite, Strobe Talbot, and the communists that McCarthy went over during the Army-McCarthy hearings. They're the same. They're the same in Hollywood. The communists never left Hollywood. They're still there. I'll break with the tune, and I'll just mention one thing. I got a feeling that the euro is going to fall apart, and they're going to be turning to dollars. Is that good for us? Will that make the dollar stronger? Is a strong dollar good for us? I don't know the answer to that, but I got a feeling that the euro is going to collapse. It's just a hunch, and I've never been right. How could it collapse? It'll be like a dollar domino theory. One country will give up the euro and go back to their own currency. Somebody's going to break out of the union.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick, mortar, and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Hey, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al, Al all the time. Hey, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, and I made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Hey, brother, ain't got a dime about you, have you? And once I built a tower, yes, a tower to the sun, of brick, mortar, and lime. Yes, I'm the fella built the tower, and now it's done. Hey, buddy, ain't got a dime about you, have you? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember? Don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al. Al all the time. Don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime?
Hang in there, boys and girls. I just knocked myself off. I gotta get back on. And my wooden computer is in the curtain falling mode. So just hang in there. Once this thing screen clears, I can come back up and we'll be alive once more. In the meantime, I just heard that I called it. I knew it was coming. I knew that what they were going to do. It was the ACLU who took down that cross in the Mojave. That's my call. That's my j'accuse the ACLU, and I believe that they did that because they knew that they would have a better chance of fighting it from being resurrected, and so they have taken the cross down under the guise of vandals did it, and they are now going to fight that it doesn't go back up. Here we go. We're going live.
Hi, you boys and girls, and welcome to the Spirit of America Party, the Spirit of America Party book, and the Spirit of America Party radio show. I just got my Mojave cross in the mail that I had ordered from the Pueblo Indians. And it's beautiful. It's better than I imagined. And it cost me $23, and it's turquoise on silver, sterling silver. And the chain is very bright and silvery. So I'm hoping to start a Mojave Cross movement. Now, this isn't the official Mojave Cross, okay? And I don't know if it's Mojave Indians that are creating this course, or just West Coast Indians. But I like it. It's turquoise on silver, and it's very delicate. And it has a silver thread running through the cross from top to bottom. But the reason that I bought it, I went out on the internet to find a Mojave cross, because the one that the communists tore down and blamed it on vandals, okay, the one that those rat bastards, communist rat bastards, tore down, the ones who have taken over the school system, the ones who have taken over the media, the ones who have taken over the House and the Senate, which should be closed tomorrow, and we should call for new elections and fire everybody that's there. There isn't one a decent politician there. Now, you see today that Obama got his banking bill, and it was 60-40. Two Democrats dissented, and three Republicans stabbed their fellow Republicans in the back. And who are they? They're the Kennedy replacement, who pretends to be a Republican from Massachusetts. He is a phony, and the guy that called it first was Mike Savage. And he has shown his true colors already. He's not even waiting for the seat to get warm. And the other two, Olympia Snowjob and the other crazy woman from Maine. Maine, I don't know what you're doing or what you're drinking up there, but if you don't get rid of these two losers, the whole nation is going to lose because of you. They, Susan Collins and Olympia Snowjob, two of the most dangerous men in... That's a slip. That's a Freudian slip. Two of the most dangerous women in politics. They look so sweet. They should be in the remake of Arsenic and Old Lace. And Scott from Massachusetts can play Teddy Roosevelt. Yeah, and all the bodies will be in the basement of Americans. These are dangerous people. You can no longer afford the luxury of electing the lesser of two evils. You have lost your country, and you're never going to get it back. The only thing you can do now is fight a delaying action to November. We have to delay, delay, delay. We have to have an organized retreat. America is on the run. The communists outnumber the Americans 51-49. We no longer are the majority. We are the Muslim-muzzled minority. And I was speaking of Muslim muzzles. I heard Alan Combs on Steve Malzberg tonight saying there's no such thing as a Muslim terrorist, because the Islam is a peaceful religion. Yes, it's a peaceful religion, a piece of you, a piece of me. You tell me that peaceful religion. You know what you do? While you're telling me it's a peaceful religion, I'm reflashing in my mind an Israeli police station that was overrun by Muslims, and they tore a guy, a policeman, apart with their bare hands, and the guy came to the window to show the rest of the mob his hands soaked in blood, and they cheered. The same people that cheered were in Brooklyn and Newark and giving out candy on 911 as they danced on the rooftops doing the Bill Maher PLO Mambo. The worst Muslim terrorists are people like Bill Maher, Rosie O'Donnell, Jay Behar, John the Monkey Stewart. Those are your biggest Muslim terrorists. So, having said that, Alan Combs is a fool. Alan Combs is an ideologue fool. He's a useful idiot. The communists love guys like Alan Combs, and he's so right and so smug in his righteousness. But he's the same guy that thinks he can negotiate with Khalid the Virgin Counter, who is a Muslim and a good Muslim. As he chants the second surah from the Quran while Alan Combs debates him, while Alan is on his knees in front of the cockpit door and his pants are soaked in pilot blood, he doesn't know where it's coming from, and Khalid the Virgin Counter is saying, I too be a citizen. It's going to be all right. Shh. We're going back to the airport. Shh. Alan Combs is what they call in the Hebrew a schmuck. The human schmuck. You look up schmuck in a dictionary. Alan Combs' picture will be there. You have a president who raced into the White House, ready to go to work for the Communist Party of the world. And he is our first communist president. And he's supported by communists. And he's looked up to by communists. And he is there, Leon Trotsky. He is there, Leventi Beria. He is there, Rasputin. Rudin Tutin, Rasputin. And he is the president of the United States, and you lost your country, and you're never getting it back. The only thing you can hope for is that enough people can muster to fight a delaying action until we can get reinforcements in November. And I'll tell you, if we don't do it in November, we're finished as a nation. This man has to be stopped. He has to be frozen in time. You can no longer let him rule the nation. And now they're getting rid of the head of the intelligence department because he's a failure. But you want to know, wait till you see who they replace him with. They're trying to decide whether it'll be Bill Ayers or Ibish from CARE. We're in trouble. We're in big trouble. You've lost your nation. You're not going to get it back. You're going to hear me say that over and over again. You lost your country. They signaled out a little kid. They want bullying laws passed, and they're bullying a little kid because he wore a rosary to school. Now, the Latin kings wear rosaries. Okay. All right. This kid is a chubby little Latino. He is not a Latin king. Okay? He says he wore the rosary for his uncle who died of cancer and I think a brother who he lost. What are you going to do? Is this, the crosses are coming down from the cemeteries and now a kid that wears a rosary is going to be singled out and bullied? How about the kids that from Illinois that wanted to play basketball in Arizona? We've gone beyond race. We've gone beyond the race war. We've gone beyond white against black, black against white, Latino against white and black, blacks against Chinese. We've gone from that. We've been so busy fighting amongst each other that the communist government that now is in power in the United States has decided it's time for states to fight each other. And that's what they're doing. And the news tonight is that, what's his name, Eric Holder, the Attorney General, who never read the Arizona law, Mr. Lawyer, the number one lawyer in the country, has two arrest warrants on his desk for Dick Cheney and George Bush. And they're going to be tried for the murder of Nancy Pelosi's two children. Her two sons, Uday and Kusei. Bartender, a champagne, and play me a musical instrument. This tune is for the World War I veterans who had their cross taken down by the ACLU communist vandals, and also for that little Latino kid who was singled out for wearing a rosary.
The God.
You know, one of the repercussions of the pedophile priest scandal has been that priests, many of them, have to suffer silently, and they can't call any attention to themselves. And as opposed to in another time when they would have said, they would have been more outspoken. Some of them have had a Muslim muzzle put on them. When I say a Muslim muzzle, the reason I say that, it's not that Muslims put a muzzle on priests, but that in America today, you can't say anything that would raise an eyebrow about a Muslim without being labeled anti-Muslim. Right? So I call it the Muslim muzzle. You have people that are afraid to call Muslims terrorists. And they always say, if you listen to all these talk show hosts, they always say radical Muslims. Well, let me tell you something. There are a lot of Muslims who are anti-American that are not radical. They're sensible. And sometimes they make more sense than you do. So don't give me this radical Muslim crap. Osama bin Laden comes from the house of bin Laden. It's one of the biggest and strongest Saudi houses in Saudi Arabia. There isn't anything that doesn't go on that the House of Saud and the House of bin Laden don't share some sort of a common interest. So don't give me that crap about radical Muslims. The word jihad means holy war. It's in the Quran. Imams get 20% of all booty taken in battle. The customs do not change. The tradition does not change. If tomorrow Mecca calls for a holy war against the United States, all Muslims will follow. Okay? If Mecca whispers a holy war, all Muslims will quietly follow. So, it's time you wake up and know your enemy. And they have an agenda, and they have a goal. And it's written in their Quran. And they have rules of engagement. And not only that, if they even deal death on fellow Muslims who they consider to be heretics, and they have another name, I forget what it is. Apostates. Okay? And they have been known to wipe out whole villages of Muslims and leave the bodies to be eaten by dogs. In Algeria, an entire village had its throat slit, every man, woman, and child, just to show the Algerian government that they weren't in control of the outskirts of town. Okay, you cannot deal like an Arab Christian told me. You cannot argue with these people. You cannot reason with these people. They have one mindset. The mindset is jihad. Jihad is in the Quran. Jihad means holy war. Holy war, blessed by God. So, just keep that in the back of your mind the next time some jerk who doesn't know the difference between a Sikh and a Sheikh stands up there and tells you that all Muslims are peace-loving. Jihad means holy war. Martyrs go to heaven. They go to paradise. I don't know where the virgin count came from. I think the Americans exaggerated it. It was probably around 30, but then they started to raise the incentive. And now it's up to 72. And the Jews are offering 80 with a coupon if you blow yourself up in your own house without going out. So hang in there a second. Let me regather my thoughts, because Alzheimer's is kicking in. I came across this on the internet. Now, if you want to see what it looks like a dollar bill. And it's a pamphlet. And it's long, like a dollar bill. And the website is www.almuhajirun.com. That's www.almuhajirun.com. Okay, and the bill that's up there, it's to celebrate the Third Islamic Conference. And the Third Islamic Conference is September the 11th, 2003. And it's got a picture of the towers burning. It's got a picture of Obama Osama bin Laden as big as the towers. And he's smiling that evil smile. And it, the dollar bill is bordered by the 19... terrorists, the 19 Muslim terrorists who flew those planes into three, four locations. So, and it says, there's a saying from the Quran, it's like verse, it's K-A-H-F colon 13. And hang in and I'll tell you what it says. So the title of the bill is The Magnificent 19. They divided the world on September the 11th. These new youth who believed in their Lord. And who's their Lord? It's the Lord of the Muslims. It is Allah. And we increased in them guidance. Okay? You don't know who you're up against. You have no idea. You're taking the Hollywood version. The Hollywood version that we're all going to sing Kumbaya. These people don't sing Kumbaya. These people sing Allahu Akbar and they cut your throat. And they practice once a year on a million lambs. And there will come a day in this country when the communists convince the impressionable that if it wasn't for the Jews, there would be no trouble, there would only be peace in the Middle East. And everything is to the fault of the Jews. And they're going to start a movement that says, let Israel stand alone. And that Israel can let Israel fight its own battles. That's the way they will get Israel. And just the way they handed over Taiwan to the Chinese, this government will hand over Israel to a billion Arabs who can't wait to get in there and cut them to pieces. And they'll all come in for the kill. And it's not the Arab that we should fear. It is guys like Alan Combs. Guys like Bill Maher. They are the ones who are going to be working the ovens and throwing their brothers and sisters into the flames, believing falsely that they will be not harmed. I think the lady was Kuwaiti, and she is an entertainer, and she's a singer of songs in many languages, including Japanese, and she's Arabic. She's Kuwaiti. And she was told that she could not sing Hava Nagila. So I'm going to play for you now the new Kuwaiti national anthem. Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the Kuwait Iranian national anthem.
Did you recognize the singer? It's Al Jolson.
Hi, you boys and girls, and welcome to the Spirit of America Party, Spirit of America Party book, and the Spirit of America Party radio show.com. I was doing some Googling, and I ran across something that sort of startled me, and I thought I would share it with you. Most of us don't know anything about how the Soviets got the atomic bomb, and nobody cares. But after watching the History Channel and seeing the sacrifice of Americans in blood during World War II, and how the atomic bomb ended World War II, and how we were the only ones that had it above all others, even though everybody was trying to develop one, I was shocked. A long time ago, by the fact that two Americans betrayed their country and worked for the Soviets. And those two Americans were Ethel and Julius Rosenberg. So I went to look up some of the highlights of Wikipedia and Googled Ethel and Julius, and I ran across some interesting things, and I just thought I'd share them with you. And you can Google this and find it yourself. Here's a timeline of events relating to the Rosenberg trial. September the 28th, 1915, Ethel Greenglass Rosenberg is born. March 1917, the Russian Revolution begins. Also in 1917, the Espionage Act that the Rosenbergs eventually would be convicted of violating is enacted. So at the time of the Russian Revolution, we had to create, for the protection of the United States, the Espionage Act. On May the 12th, 1918, Julius Rosenberg is born. In 1929, 12 years after the Russian Revolution, the Communist Party of the United States is founded. Early 1930s, Julius Rosenberg is member of Young Communist League and campaigns for the Scottsboro Boys. The Scottsboro Boys were all black who were tried in Alabama for the rape of two white women. At the time, the penalty for rape in the United States was death. Now, they just charged the woman with the dating. So, in 1934, Julius Rosenberg enters a City College of New York, is involved in radical politics. In the summer of 1939, Julius and Ethel get married. On December the 7th, 1941, the U.S. enters World War II after the attack on Pearl Harbor. You mean the U.S. was dragged into World War II? The U.S. had no intention of going to war. Maybe politicians did, but the people didn't. But Pearl Harbor changed all that. In 1942, Julius Rosenberg becomes a member of the Signal Corps. In 1943, the Rosenbergs cease open activities with Communist Party, and their subscription to the Daily Worker stops. In 1943, Soviet spy master Feklisov first meets with Julius Rosenberg. In July 1944, David Greenglass is chosen to work on the Manhattan Project. In November of 1944, Julius Rosenberg recruits the aide of Greenglass. It says of green glasses, so it might have been a husband and wife, in obtaining information about the Manhattan Project. In December of 1944, Julius Rosenberg provides the Soviets with a proximity fuse. In January 1945, David Greenglass provides his own notes and a sketch of a high explosive lens from the Manhattan Project. In June of 1945, Harry Gold meets with Greenglass in Albuquerque. In July 16, 1945, the United States explodes the first atom bomb at Alamogordo, New Mexico. In August 6, 1945, the United States drops the atom bomb on Hiroshima. September 2, 1945, World War II ends with the Japanese surrender. September 1945, a Greenglass meets with Rosenberg while on furlough in New York. In 1945, Julius Rosenberg is dismissed from the U.S. Signal Corps. In 1946, Feklasov meets with Julius Rosenberg for the last time. In late 1946, the Venona Code is broken. In 1947, Rosenberg's machine shop business fails. In June 30th, 1948, Max Elitcher and Morton Sobel drive to Catherine's Slip, where Sobel meets with Julius Rosenberg to exchange microfilm. In August 28th, 1949, the Soviets detonate their first atom bomb. On January 21, 1950, Alger Hiss, convicted of perjury in denying that he passed secret documents to communist agent Whittaker Chambers. February 2, 1950, Klaus Fuchs is arrested. March 1950, Julius Rosenberg warns Greenglass to flee the country. May 1950, Rosenberg asks his physician about what kind of shots are necessary for a trip to Mexico. In May 22, 1950, Harry Gold confesses to the FBI. May or June of 1950, Rosenberg's visit a photographer to obtain passport photos. June 15, 1950, David Greenglass names Julius as the man who recruited him to spy for the Soviet Union. June 16, 1950, Julius Rosenberg is first interviewed by the FBI. Joel Barr disappears in Paris. Hang in. I'm going to page 3. Forgive me for taking so long. June 30th, 1950, United States forces engage in the Korean War. June 17th, 1950, Julius Rosenberg is arrested while shaving. August 11th, 1950, Ethel Rosenberg is arrested. August 1950, Sobel and family are kidnapped by Mexican thugs and delivered to U.S. authorities at the border. January 31st, that's isn't that something? So that's how we used to operate. If we want somebody, we could get them. January 31st, 1951, a grand jury indicts Rosenberg, Sobel, David Greenglass, and Yakovlev. February 1951, Greenglasses change their story, implicating Ethel Rosenberg in spy activities. 1951, March the 6th, the trial begins. March 15, 1951, William Pearl is arrested on espionage charges. March 28, 1951, the trial ends. March 29, 1951, jury returns verdict, guilty of conspiracy to commit espionage. April 5, 1951, Judge Kaufman imposes the death sentence on Rosenberg's, sentences Sobel to 30 years. I'm going to read you a little bit about Judge Kaufman. He was a liberal judge. January the 10th, 1952, appeal before the United States Court of Appeals, the Second Circuit. February the 25th, 1952, appeal denied by Second Circuit Court of Appeals. In opinion by Judge Jerome Frank. October 13, 1952, Supreme Court announces that it ruled against granting certiorari on the Rosenberg's appeal. June 13, 1953, Supreme Court denies a stay of execution. June 17, 1953, Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas grants a stay of execution. 2 days later, the Supreme Court in special session vacates Judge Douglas's stay of execution. On June 19, 1953, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg are executed. On June 21, 1953, the funeral of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. 1960, proximity fuse enables Soviets to shoot down American U-2 spy plane over Soviet territory. 1969, Martin Sobel is released from prison. I got one more page here for you. Hang in there. Forgive me. Forgive me. Here we go. 1970 to 1974, Khrushchev tape records his memoirs containing observations on the Rosenberg's spy role. 1985, Barr and Sarant flee to the Soviet Union. 1990, Khrushchev memoirs are published, suggesting that Rosenberg's helped Soviets acquire the A-bomb. July 11, 1995, decoded Venona cables indicating Rosenberg's involvement in espionage are released by NSA and CIA. 1997, Soviet spymaster Feklisov admits in interviews that he met with Julius Rosenberg between 1943 and 1946. In 2001, David Greenglass admits that the trial testimony of the Greenglasses concerning Ethel Rosenberg's role in the conspiracy was perjured. 2008, Martin Sobel finally admits that he spied for the Soviet Union. Also newly released, a grand jury testimony suggests that the Greenglasses may have lied in their trial testimony when they stated that Ethel Rosenberg typed up the secret information provided to the Soviets. In her grand jury testimony, Ruth Greenglass said that she had wrote the secret information in longhand, testimony that is consistent with decoded Soviet cables, indicating that the material came to them in longhand form. Interesting, isn't it? Isn't it great that we have people like this who betray our country? You think they're the only ones? You don't think that Jane Fonda shouldn't have gotten a seat in Big Sparky? You think that communism is dead and has gone away forever? They just got more clever. You think your intelligence agency is as smart as the FBI and the CIA was back then? Or have they always been behind the eight ball? Can you imagine the stigma that was placed upon the Jewish community because these two people were named Rosenberg? You don't think that they had to live with that black cloud over their head? You don't think that people of Jewish descent weren't labeled traitors? Well, here's the good news. The judge that sentenced them to death, his name was Irving Kaufman. So, and I will now celebrate this guy's birthday every year. Hail Judge Irving Kaufman. And I'm going to read you the sentence he imposed upon the Rosenbergs and his statement. Citizens of this country, I hope you're listening, all you Hollywood communists out there, who betray their fellow countrymen can be under none of the delusions that the benignity of Soviet power that they might have been prior to World War II. The nature of Russian terrorism is now self-evident. Idealism as a rationale dissolves. I consider your crime worse than murder. and it is betrayal. The lowest form in the rung of hell is for those who betray a trust. Plain, deliberate, contemplated murder is dwarfed in magnitude by comparison with the crime you have committed. In committing the act of murder, the criminal kills only his victim. The immediate family is brought to grief, and when justice is meted out, the chapter is closed. But in your case, I believe your conduct in putting into the hands of the Russian the A-bomb years before our best scientists predicted Russia would perfect the bomb has already caused, in my opinion, the communist aggression in Korea, with the resultant casualties exceeding 50,000, and who knows but the millions more of innocent people may pay the price of your treason. Treason! Indeed, by your betrayal, you undoubtedly have altered the course of history to the disadvantage of our country. No one, that should be the guideline. Betrayal alters the course of history to the disadvantage of our country. No one can say that we do not live in a constant state of tension. We have evidence of your treachery all around us every day. For the civilian defense activities throughout the nation are aimed at preparing us for an atomic bomb attack. Nor can it be said in mitigation of the offense that the power which set the conspiracy in motion and profited from it was not openly hostile to the United States at the time of the conspiracy and still is today, in my opinion. If this was your excuse, the error of your ways in setting yourselves above our properly constituted authorities and the decision of those authorities not to share the information with Russia must now be obvious. In the light of this, I can only conclude that the defendants entered into this most serious conspiracy against their country with full realization of its implications. The statute of which the defendants at the bar stand convicted is clear. I have previously stated my view that the verdict of guilty was amply justified by the evidence. In the light of the circumstances, I feel that I must pass such sentence upon the principals in this diabolical conspiracy to destroy a God-fearing nation. I feel that I must pass such a sentence upon the principals in this diabolical conspiracy to destroy a God-fearing nation, which will demonstrate with finality that this nation's security must remain inviolate. That traffic in military secrets, whether promoted by slavish devotion to a foreign ideology or by the desire for monetary gains, must cease. The evidence indicated quite clearly that Julius Rosenberg was the prime mover in this conspiracy. However, let no mistake be made about the role of his wife, Ethel Rosenberg, played in this conspiracy. Instead of deterring him from pursuing his ignoble cause, she encouraged and assisted the cause. She was a mature woman, almost 3 years older than her husband and almost 7 years older than her younger brother. She was a full-fledged partner in this crime. Indeed, the defendants, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, placed their devotion to their cause above their own personal safety and were conscious that they were sacrificing their own children should their misdeeds be detected, all of which did not deter them from pursuing their course. Love for their cause dominated their lives. It was even greater than their love for their children. And then he sentenced them to the electric chair. And that's how people in the 50s treated traitors. And now today, in this God-fearing country, as alluded to by Judge Irving Kaufman, thieves in the night steal crosses from American hero cemeteries and get away with it. and they're classified as vandals when they should be classified as traitors, and they too should receive the death penalty. And communism is back stronger than ever. The Russians feigned losing the Cold War, and all they did was cool their heels and destroy this nation, as they do every day. They've destroyed churches, they've destroyed cemeteries, they've destroyed the Constitution, and they even got one of their own elected. And if you Google Judge Irvin Kaufman, you will see that he was a liberal judge. But when it came to defending his country, he was pro-American all the way. So I dedicate, and he died, in, I think, in 1981, pancreatic cancer. So I dedicate this tune to you, Judge Irvin Kaufman, for protecting the United States with your whole heart and your whole soul.
My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside, let freedom ring. Let music swell the breeze, and ring from all the trees, sweet freedom song. Let mortal tongues away, let all that grieve partake, let rocks their silence break, the sound prolong.
Spirit of America Party book and the Spirit of America Party, a radio show. Shall we start off with a tune?
Without a song,
The election results are in tonight for these primaries, and the Tea Party is singing. The only place they're not singing is in Murtha's backyard, which goes to prove that there are diehard Democrats. They don't care. They don't care. If you, they got a bad guy and they like him, they're going to shove him down your throat. So it's too bad that Murtha's people are still in power. And that's a sad state of affairs for the U.S. military, because Murtha never liked them. And he's now working boiler number three with Ted Kennedy. But having said that, we were doing a little reminiscing today. I happened to be in the big city and visiting with people who are real New Yorkers. Not yuppie come here New Yorkers. I'm talking about New Yorkers who were born and played on cobblestone streets downtown New York. The original New Yorkers who had a great time. They were talking about one block that they all lived on, and there was at least 50 kids just playing on the one block. And today it's a ghost valley. It's an empty, it's just the people walking their dogs. Everybody's got a dog. Nobody has a kid. Yes, we've become a nation of canine corps. But anyway, that's another problem for another day. They were talking about how it costs so much money to have an apartment in New York City. And this one fella, he was a real hard worker all his life, and he was always one kid out from having money in his pocket. And every time he wanted to get his own place, he couldn't do it. So they lived in the projects, and that's no place to live. That's no place for a human being. I gotta tell you. Too much drugs and too much violence. You get rid of drugs in the United States, you can throw all the gates and all the burglar alarms in the river, and people will be able to breathe again. They're worried about the environment. The worst environment you're all living in, including me, is the drug environment. I watched this whole nation change as drugs took over. Every man became a thief. They had to steal to fix, to keep their habit going. One out of five Americans is a junkie, and he brings down five good Americans. It is absolutely sad and tragic that we can't, not only can't we keep the borders closed, but we can't fight drugs. Nobody wants to even recognize it. The only thing they have is a sign up in front of the school that says, please don't bring your drugs within two blocks. And that's what the sign really says. But anyway, so this guy was, he was trying to get a decent living quarters downtown Manhattan. So at the time, they were building, I guess, co-ops right on the waterfront. And the city was involved. So he and his wife, they went down to fill out an application. And they filled out the application. And the guy said to them, "You can't, you don't qualify for this apartment." And he said, "Why not?" He said, "Because you make too much money." So he said, "Well, you see this woman here? She's my wife, and I just fired her. She's fired. She has no job. She's fired. Give me the application. I'll fill it out for myself." And the guy gave him the application. 3 years later, he got a phone call, and they said, "We're considering your application, but we have to turn you down. And the reason that we have to turn you down is you make too little money." How's that? You can't win for losing, right? Is that sad or what? So then the conversation turned to Mayor Bloomingdale's memorial to the 911 terrorists. And make no bones about it, Mayor Bloomingdale is responsible for this second atrocity committed upon the innocents of New York City. The first thing that Mayor Bloomingdale did when they asked him how come, or the first words that he said when they asked him how come there's no towers, he said, "We have to move on. We have to get over 911. That's easy for him to say. He didn't have a daughter trapped on the 80th floor named Melissa, who was calling home to leave a voicemail message to her mother. And I'm sure her mother plays that voicemail message over and over and over. But Mayor Bloomingdale appointed the chairman of Community Board 1 in 2002. And she and Community Board 1 created an Islamic Jihad sanctuary under the guise of peace in our time, and allowed a mosque to be built two blocks away from the World Trade Center massacre. And guess what? It's not the first mosque, it's the second, because two blocks in the other direction is another mosque. Isn't that great? So I sent Mayor Bloomingdale an email, and I asked him why he just didn't build the mosque right on the site. And I hold him responsible for this faux pas, this slap in the face of every American and every New Yorker. You know, 911 New Yorkers come from all over the United States. They serve in Iraq and Afghanistan and in Djibouti. They serve in Kosovo. They serve in Korea. They serve in Japan. They serve in Germany. They are all 911 New Yorkers. And any day of the week when they are given orders to fight back without getting a medal, unless it's one for surrender, which they're dreaming of now in Babylon, D.C., in the district of Columbine. Unbelievable what's going on in this country. You should close Washington down, and they should put up a sign that says latrine closed, because there's more shenanigans going. That's a frat city. That's what that is. Every night, all these senators and congressmen are being plied with booze and broads by lobbyists. And this is like this is the Academy Awards of betraying your country. And this is your only chance to get it back. If you don't get it back by November, you won't even remember that you were once an American. And isn't it time we raise the standards for American citizenship? We should have a couple of requirements. One, you have to speak English. Two, you have only one country. And three, you have to love the USA. And if you don't have those requirements, let's stop lowering the bar and turning it into a limbo rod. Let's shoot high. Let's aim high, being that we're not going into outer space anymore. Let's aim high.
Oh, we'll be in outer space. Yes, we will be. We'll all be in outer space if Iran gets enough nukes. Yeah. I just sent out a blog. It's a space, a satellite in the shape of a cross. And you can see the shuttle is heading towards it. Big, giant cross. A signal cross. And the shuttle's heading towards it. And the title was The Other Galaxy. And the voice coming, the caption coming from the spacecraft is, it looks like somebody's been here before us. I wonder what kind of music they like. And then I attached a religious hymn to the blog. And another blog, and I found this by accident. I was looking for a picture of the 911 terrorists, and there was an invitation to the Islamic Convention on September the 11th, 2003. And it's a picture of the towers on fire. It's a picture of Osama bin Laden as big as the towers, smiling. And then it's like a dollar bill. And all around the edge are the 19 terrorists who destroyed 3,000 Americans and inflicted the greatest defeat in the history of the United States on the civilian population. And I took that picture and I entitled it Community Board Number One. And just think about this. Rudy Giuliani gave back $10 million from Prince bin Talal on the first 911 get-together. And here, Mayor Bloomingdale is threatening New Yorkers, telling them they better not hurt Pakistanis. As if New Yorkers were planning to hurt Pakistanis. But why did this man say that? What's in his mind? What's in his devious mind? And here's Rudy Giuliani, who was denied a third term by Bloomingdale, who now owns Community Board 1 and the City Council. This guy is, he's a pasha. He's a sultan. He is not a mayor. You think about that. And then I got a message from Glenn Beck in his, you know, in his daily blog, and he's and he says he's under siege by Anthony Weiner. So I sent him a return blog with a little bit of encouragement. And I just made him aware of the fact that 55 days before 9-1-1, little Anthony Weiner voted to let the American flag burn when he was called on the 17th of July to vote to pass a law that flag burning was a desecration and it should be a federal offense. And Anthony said, no, it's not. It's freedom of speech. That's little Anthony Weiner, the guy that looks like a rat. And guess what? He was endorsed by the New York Fire Department on his re-election run. And I wonder if the New York Fire Department knew he voted to let 343 American flags burn that represent the 343 firemen who never went home that night for dinner, the night of 9-1-1, and who are now street names. In my borough, they're street names, and they're also on an American flag in my church. And Anthony Weiner voted to let their flag burn. They would never let their flag burn. That's why they're firemen. You think about that. And Anthony Weiner is not alone. There were 135 Viet Congress mice with him on that fateful day. July the 17th, 2 weeks after the 4th of July, they voted to let all glory burn. And the majority were Democrats. There were 48 senators who voted to burn that flag. And 40 were Democrats. They voted to burn it 40 days before 9-1-1, SJR-7. And one of them was Arlen Specter, who's now out of business, finally. This guy has changed parties. This guy is about as loyal as a chameleon to one color. As a matter of fact, I think he's probably going to run on an independent. Maybe he'll run on the Thracian ticket. This guy has jumped more ships than Barbary Pirates. Yeah, and now he got his just desserts. And the good news is tonight that a Republican named Toomey in Pennsylvania has been presented for victory. And do you know who stopped Toomey in his last run for office? George Bush. George Bush put him down and endorsed Arlen Specter, who put George Bush down. How's that? Georgie Porgy didn't do good that night. And not only did Georgie Porgy do bad that night, he also gave up New York and New Jersey to Schumer and to John Corzine. He didn't even come in and fight for those two states. And that told me something about George Bush I did not like to realize. He was advised to give him up. Give up New York and New Jersey. And whoever advised him should be taken out and horsewhipped. Because of that kind of attitude, the rollover re-puppies gave Obama a walk-on. And now Newt Gingrich wants to set the record straight. And Newt had his chance, and he showed his true colors when he voted for a liberal Republican upstate in New York. When he endorsed a liberal Republican upstate New York, who was more Democrat than Republican. She was an Arlen Specter over a conservative. And Newt showed me he can be bought. And that's how I rate Newt. And to quote a great American, while all these guys are pigging out in Washington, D.C., a great American, a man who took no bribe money, Harry Truman. When he left office, he wasn't even able to cover the mortgage on his house. He had to write a book. He was on a campaign train that ran out of money. And they stopped the train on the train tracks till he got some more campaign money. How's that? Never stole a dime. And here you got President Pinocchio Pants made $137 million while in office. Plus the uranium deal he made with the Canadians and the Kazakhs that he got a commission for after. And now he's talking about everybody can afford a VAT tax. If you don't get rid of all these Democrats, you're going to die. You're going to lose your country. You'll be bringing home 10% of your salary in 10 years. You think I'm kidding? You wait and see. Hang in there. I'll give you a tune.
They used to tell me I was building a dream. And so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick, mortar and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Hey, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al. Al all the time. Hey, don't you remember? I'm your pal. brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, and I made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Hey, brother, ain't got a dime about you, have you? And once I built a tower, yes, a tower to the sun, of brick, mortar, and lime. Yes, I'm the fella built a tower, and now it's done. Hey, buddy, ain't got a dime about you, have you? Once in khaki suits, he will swell. Follow that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember? Don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al. Al all the time. Don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare?
Did you see this guy Posner selling out the United States? What is it? It's his turn to bow now? Wasn't it enough that our illustrious president without papers bowed before the Chinese emperor? Now he's sending Posner to go lick the guy's boots? Oh, he's apologizing for Arizona. You know, it was bad when they turned black against white, Puerto Rican against Cuban, Haitian against Cuban. It was bad when they turned blacks against Chinese. Now they're turning states against each other. I feel sorry for those basketball girls in Illinois. They were pawns in a dirty, filthy game that was only politics only. And I blame Obama for that, Mr. Basketball himself. And he gave those girls the shaft. Those girls in Illinois, they should be flown first class to Arizona and be allowed to play anybody they want to. And I got to tell you something. I'm definitely going, if I go on a tour, I'm going to Arizona. I'm going to support the people of Arizona with my money. I'm pro-Arizona. And I'm not pro-California, because California has taken everybody for a ride. You look at Uday Pelosi. Do you know Nancy Pelosi wants to charge Bush with murder? Did you know that? She wants to charge Bush with the murder of her two sons, Uday and Kusei. And this woman was Speaker of the House, and she went to Syria, to the home of the biggest bomb maker in the Middle East, and she licked his ankles. And she went there, with Dennis Kucinich, who took the toes. How's that? How's that for American surrender? That's what we've done. Do you know what? The Russians have won the Cold War. We have lost it. We have betrayed the Reagan legacy. And we have surrendered. Ted Kennedy opened up doors to the filth of the world. They have come here, they have sacked this country, and they have two passports. When Israel invaded Lebanon, the big headline was 10,000 Americans trapped in Beirut. And then they showed them, and they were all wearing burkas. You tell me, where did your country go? It's not yours anymore. You have nothing to say. You don't have anything to say about the way you raise your children. You don't have anything to say about the crime rate. You don't have anything to say about borders, language, and culture, as Mike Savage calls for it all the time. And speaking of Savage tonight, he was going after Joy Behar. That woman is a beast. She is in the book of Revelation. She is a beast of beasts. Do you know in the book of Revelation it says that a beast will appear in the skies, and they have her picture in the Bible. And her tail will sweep the stars from the sky. And that's Joy Behar. This woman is evil personified. Absolutely. And I hope she gets her just desserts. I hope she's down there in boiler number three with Kennedy and Murtha. And I call The View to puke, because every time I watch it, I get sick. It's absolutely it's absolutely one of the most anti-American shows I ever seen. And I don't know if you saw it or not about the story about Walter Cronkite. I don't know if I read it or not. I think I did read it. I think you'll catch it on the show, that he sold out America. So you know what? He's down there in boiler number three with Ted Kennedy, too, without his pipe. Hang in there. My theme is you lost your country and you're never getting it back. You've got one slim sliver, ray of hope, and that's this November. First off, my advice to every politician who wants to save this country, you better fight a delaying action so this Obama cannot hurt us any more than he already has. He came in at 120 miles an hour with his game plan and all his commissars, and he has gone a full boat in implementing every pro-communist plan he possibly can, from disarmament and surrender to dividing the country more than it's been divided since the Civil War. More than the Civil War. He has divided this country. Okay? The teachers are indoctrinating the children. You don't have American kids in schools anymore. You have un-American kids in schools. Eventually, one day, they'll be trained well enough, they'll point you out in a lineup. They'll point their parents out in a lineup. You wait and see. Stool pigeonism is in. They want, and Big Brother is watching everybody. And it's going to get worse. And the sad part about it is, this generation doesn't know the difference between liberty and slavery. How do you know you're not brainwashed? You don't. The only way you can tell is if you feel behind your left ear and there's a drain plug there, you know they got you good. And you've been taught to hate your country and you don't even know it. So, having said that, let me take a break. Can you believe that the number one lawyer in the United States, the Attorney General, never read the Arizona law? Can you believe that the number one commander of Homeland Security, that dingbat, has never read the Arizona law? Can you believe the spokesman for the Communist State Department, who gets more Marines killed than Al-Qaeda? Can you believe that communist-run State Department, the spokesman for that Red Brigade, has never read that Arizona law, yet they all condemned it? Now, who told them to condemn it? It's the man on the top. It's the grand poobah. And if they couldn't read 12 pages of Arizona law, what makes you think they read 2,800 pages of the medical journal? Yeah. I got to tell you, the consensus of opinion around the kitchen table in downtown in New York, where if you go up to the roof, you can see the World Trade Center hole in the ground, okay? The consensus of opinion is the country's finished. Now, when you hear New Yorkers who were born and sang East Side, West Side all around the town, and Sweet Rosie O'Grady, saying this country is finished, they've been around long enough to know the difference, and they don't say it gleefully. They say it with a heavy heart, a heavy broken heart. And that's sad. And what's really sad is the generation that's going to lose it all has no idea what they're losing. The government has bought the student vote. The government has bought the black vote. The government has bought the Latino vote. The government has bought the union vote. You think about that. How can we give $1 billion to bail out Greece when we can't bail out upstate New York? How can that be? How can we pay 26% of the UN tab to watch them go to countries and rape little African girls in grass huts? How can we do that? How can we pay 26% of the UN tab to be labeled by the jihadists at the UN as inhumane? You know what Mayor Bloomingdale needs in his office? He needs a cockpit door that's soaked in blood. That's what he needs. He needs a reminder every day. You ever see that classic picture of those people trapped above the 80th floor? My wife just looked at that picture tonight and said, I hate that picture. I said, Mom, it should be on a stamp, but you'll never see it on a stamp. And now I'm going to give you the bright side of things. I'm talking to a guy who was in Iraq. And he worked for an outfit similar to Blackwater, which the Obama administration and the Democrats attacked as bad people. So he's pulling guard duty, and he has a friend that he met when he went over there. And the salaries were pretty good. And his friend says to him, you know what? I'm leaving this outfit. I'm going with another outfit. I think the outfit was Blackwater. And he says they're paying $20,000 a year more. And so I'll see you. And he left to join that outfit. And the next day he was hanging on the Fallujah Bridge. How's that? You know, he's one of those four guys. Anyway, and he tried to talk my friend into going with him. And my friend said, no, I'll stay where I am. So anyway, my friend tells me that when we first went to Iraq, we weren't prepared. And that vehicles had canvas doors. Now, you see the equipment that's rolling around Iraq today and in up in Afghanistan? You see how reinforced that equipment is compared to what it was when we first went there? Why do you think that is? Why is that equipment more fortified today than when we first went there? Because we learn and we adapt. And that's what makes our boys and girls the most perfected fighting unit in the world. They have the experience. It cost them 4,500 lives in Iraq. It cost them over 1,000 in Afghanistan. Who, by the way, Obama, has lost more American troops in 1 year in Afghanistan than Bush did in 8. But you don't hear that. You don't see the Times clicking off those numbers, do you? You see the Times showing the pictures of the fallen? Every day they would serve up Bush's disaster, but they're hiding Obama's disaster. And I hear tonight I'm listening to, what's his name, Dave Miller, and he's got a guy on, and they're saying that McChrystal don't have it. Isn't that interesting? But the good news is we have a more effective fighting force today, more qualified, more experienced than any other fighting unit in the world. And that's going to save lives in the long run. And the best way to save more lives is more arms. And the best way to save more lives is more nukes. And stop this giveaway and countdown to blast off by making our enemies stronger. And you heard me say it earlier tonight. I'm going to say it again. In the words of the greatest American president, the man who could be king, George Washington, in times of peace, prepare for war. No truer words were ever spoken. If you don't believe me, call Kane and ask him where his brother is. What you think of that, a guy running in Connecticut who said he served in Vietnam and he was never there? Can you believe that? Can you absolutely believe that? How hard up these guys are for votes that they would lie like that? Unbelievable, right? It's really disgusting how they really lie. Oh, and I know one of the comments. First off, this friend who we were with today, sitting around the kitchen table downtown New York, he had a tattoo. And guess how much he paid for it? It was a big tattoo on his, it took up his whole arm. It said mom and dad on it, you know. And it had an eagle. And guess how much he paid to have the tattoo? He paid a quarter. And his friends got tattoos, but they got smaller ones for 15 cents. How's that? Does that crack you up or what? And he said he got it from the best tattoo artist in a Chinatown. And the guy's name, I think, was Charlie Wang. Everybody knew him. And he was the best tattoo artist. And it was all done by hand. No electricity. All right, so having said that, what was I going to tell you? We were talking about the snake that said he had served in Vietnam. And I flash back to a guy that paid off Clinton when he was when Clinton was taking small donations. And Clinton authorized him to be buried in Arlington Cemetery, and he never served in the military. And he had told all his relatives that he was a big man in the military. And Clinton went along with them. You know, he sold a grave site. I'm surprised they didn't take any crosses and call it furniture. But anyway, the military, the veterans found out about it, and they got annoyed. And they had to dig the guy up, and they threw him out of Arlington Cemetery. How's that? How's that for a sellout nation? I say 1 out of 12 betrays his country. I use the Judas principle: 12 apostles and one defected. Yeah, 1 out of 12. Isn't that great?
That's our show, folks. Have a nice night.